welcome back, and thank you for tuning in. I hope you had a good week so far. I'm Henrik Palmgren, and you are listening to Red Eyes Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. Lots going on, as usual. We had additional riots in Sweden this week, echoing last summer's activities all throughout the major cities of Sweden. This time, more cars torched in the immigrant-dense suburbs of Stockholm, stone-throwing and unrest. Now, Sweden is quickly turning into a region of chaos and disorder as more people turn the other cheek and believe that it is going to go away. They are quickly falling into the trap of believing that this probably soon will begin to get better. It's just a little bump in the road. Yeah, right. Keep telling yourself that. We've also had stories coming out from Rotherham in the UK about the Muslim Pakistani gangs that have been running sex rings with over 1,400 primarily white British girls for over 16 years. Gangs of pedophiles have been sexually abusing these young girls. They have been threatened. They were forced in some cases to have sex with multiple men. Some got gasoline thrown on them and threatened to be burnt if they talked about this or tried to escape. And then we have, you know, the city officials and police and everything else who were responsible for this blatant failure. They actually were in communication with some of the victims. They saw them, some as young as 11 years old. And they were treated with contempt and categorized as being out of control or simply ignored when they asked for help. In some cases, parents who tried to rescue their children from abusers were themselves arrested. They were, can you believe that? They were arrested. And then police officers even dismissed the rape of children by saying that sex had been consensual. Now, council officials and police have been unwilling to address the issue, of course, for fear of being labeled racists. You know, these are treasonous politicians all throughout Europe that continue to keep their mouths shut and have decided to sacrifice the children of Europe and abuse them and ruin their entire lives because of this fantasy of a multicultural society and because of their spineless cowardice. They should be hanged in the streets. And I bet these guys' names, they will go down in history as great men of honor and bravery, right? Well, if this doesn't touch your heart and speak to all the madness that we've been addressing lately, I don't know what will, and I don't know what will make you see the light of what is happening here and why. You can read more about these stories for yourself and many more right now on redeyescreations.com. All right, shifting gears a bit here. Today, we are talking with Daniel Updike, a.k.a. Wodenson from the NRR, Northern Runes Radio. We'll cover the folkish belief system of Asatru, and the main question that we'll try to get to today is how to apply Asatru in the 21st century. How does it fit in? As more and more people are falling away from the 1,500-year or so long PSYOP that has been Christianity, it's time for our European folk to seek their home again and return to the system of their ancestors. But the question is, does this mean stop using technology and computers and start plowing the field with oxen again? Or what does it mean? And how can you adopt the Asatru belief system and live by the nine noble virtues in your daily life? Well, this is what we'll try to tackle in today's program. Much more coming up. Stay with us. Hi, Daniel. Welcome, and thank you for being here with us today. It's great to have you on the show. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing excellent, and thank you for having me.
You bet. We have a lot to discuss today. Always interesting to talk with a fellow Asatru, you know, follower and one who is interested in ancient Northern European heritage and ancestry and everything else. But before we kind of get into the main topic of today here, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Northern Runes Radio, when you started this up, Daniel, and what got you attracted to Asatru in the first place?
Well, that's a story in and of itself, and I guess I'll just start at the beginning. I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian home. My father was a preacher for decades, and so of course I grew up very well versed in Christianity. However, when I was very young, say about 4 years old. I used to draw. I had a fascination with drawing, as most little kids do. And I used to draw out these little symbols. And once my parents saw me draw out these little symbols, and I got a belt across my backside for having drawn those symbols. I had no idea why. I had no idea what they were. But being a rebellious child, I just secretly drew them. And they used to decorate my notebooks in school. And I continued on living my life. However, there was always something that was missing. There was something that just wasn't there. And one day, I was walking through a bookstore, actually looking for something totally unrelated to the bookstore that I was in, which dealt with metaphysical things. And I saw the symbols that I drew out when I was a child on the front cover of a book. And I stopped and I looked at these and said, "What the heck is this?" And it turns out that I drew out some 18 and very accurately runes of the 29 runes of the Anglo-Saxon Futhorc when I was 4 years old.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I was shocked at this. I couldn't believe it. And so I began to look into what this was all about. And then I came across the religion of Ulcetru and officially began really studying what this all meant and how this would be. And of course, this was almost 28 years ago. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. We won't say exactly how old. I began studying, and it was not like it is today. There wasn't a lot of stuff written about this that wasn't written at the end of the 18th century or the early 1900s. Very difficult going. Not being a scholar in the ancient languages, I was reading various translations and trying to figure out how this fit together and that fit together. And I got frustrated, but I carried on, and I never gave up. And I began to ask the gods to reveal themselves to me. I began to ask the gods to tell me what these things meant. And I got led into different esoteric orders that talked about things that were not Ulcetru related, but were well published. And to study that. And through that study, learn how to strip things down to their lowest common denominator. Taking comparative world religions as well, studying tribal religions, applying this same type of literary strip down, as I call it, to the different practices that were out there. One became aware of something very common, and that was that there was a certain state of consciousness that they were trying to achieve. The methods were different, the reasons were different, the culture was different, the purpose was different, but the state of consciousness was not. And so then I began to take that and go back to the lore that I had such a hard time reading and say, okay, well, how would our ancestors have, using this lore, achieved that state of consciousness so that they could communicate with the gods, so they could communicate with the ancestors, so they could communicate with the land spirits and the spirits of the water and of the sky? How is it that they would use the runes? What are these formulas that the rune masters wrote, like Alu? And what did it mean when on one of the inscriptions it says, and this was an inscription that I believe was to bless those who were fishermen, because our ancestors dealt an awful lot with fishing and you know, near coastal waters and so forth. You know, this inscription has been sprinkled with the sea of the corpse. Well, what does that mean? Well, of course, that was my first exposure to skaldic poetry. And then I began to study skaldic poetry. and understand that's how all the lore was written, or most of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how they would use the multiple meanings. They took great pride in skaldic prose or poetry to imbue with multiple layers of meaning, sometimes every word in a stanza, and engage the whole mind, engage the whole soul. So it could mean something to somebody who knew nothing about our lore, and means something totally different to somebody who did know about our lore. And how this skaldic prose was so potent that it made the lore memorable. It wasn't, you know, you read the sagas of the heroes, the sagas of the gods, you know, the prose Edda, the poetic Edda, all of the different things that we have that have survived. And yes, most of them were written in the post-Christian era, but the skaldic prose is still there.
Yeah.
And you look and you read and you understand that there is so much more. You could tell the story around the campfire, or you could find out what it meant to be an enlightened soul from reading the same stanza. And, you know, it just began to become more and more. And I practiced what I could by myself for quite some time of the bloat, which means sacrifice to the gods. And that could be simple or it could be complex. It would depend. That depends totally on the person that's doing that. I would honor the gods that were named after the days of our week. Many people don't realize that, with the exception of Saturday, every day of our week has been named after one of our gods or goddesses.
That's right.
You know, and I would just sometimes even just recite a poem of remembrance for the day of the week and the god or goddess that was represented by that. And things began to happen in my life. And I ended up through the, you know, I'm jumping years into the future here now, working in a very lucrative type of business. I was a tradesman. I used to make, I won't go into the dollar figure amount, but it wasn't low. Going up into the far north in Alberta, Canada, working in the oil fields. And I also used to do work with an environmental company when I didn't have calls available through the union hall to work in the trade. I would work for this company that did environmental testing in the same plants for the same pay. And I went down face first onto the ground after putting our equipment into the truck. And the only thing that saved my life was the fact that my partner was, in his previous profession, an emergency medical technician, and he recognized I was having a heart attack. And he got me to the emergency services on the site. They cut my coveralls off of me. They put me in an ambulance, and it was a 45-minute ride to the hospital from where I was at. Via the ambulance. And when I got to the hospital, they tried everything. And finally, I had this doctor leaning over me with his mask on, and he said to me that they had to deliberately stop my heart. Every medication had failed. And I could see them warming up the paddles.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stop your heart, and then we're going to try to start it again. And if it starts again, and I paid special attention to the word if.
No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah, he said it should reset itself and your rhythm should become normal enough that we can work with you. And so I blinked twice to indicate that, yes, go ahead, because obviously if they didn't do anything, things weren't going to be good and I'd probably die anyway. So they stopped my heart and they put something in my mouth to keep me from biting my tongue. And I remember having an experience that, you know, I'm not going to go into in this interview, but let me just say that when they stopped my heart, I wasn't alone. Mm-hmm. And I had a sense of peace and tranquility and a sense of the presence of the gods. And I was left challenged, we'll just say, when I came to, that I had not taken any of the things that had been given to me in knowledge and shared it with anyone. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, that's right. And, you know, I always sort of kept to myself and I didn't really want to get out there too much. And then I had it confirmed again because I was kind of bemoaning the fact that there weren't very many Ossetroir in my area where we lived. And my wife came to me and pointed her finger in my face and stamped her foot on the ground and said to me that if I had such a problem with that I should get off my ass and do something about it.
Yep. Yep.
Those were her exact words. And I said, you're right. And so I devised a series of seminars called the Also True and Ancient Runes sessions. And they were 4 hours each with an intermission after the second hour. And I didn't think anybody would show up, really. I had such great faith in myself at the time. And I put a little bit of advertising out, not paid advertising, but word of mouth and a couple of flyers that were put up at a few establishments in the city I was in. And I walked into a packed room. And so we did the seminar. And after the first session, every last single one of them, when's the next one? And so the next one was done the following month. They come out afterwards, and you know, I couldn't hardly get out the door with all of the questions that were being asked. And then, when's the next one? And there were four sessions in total. And finally, at the end of the fourth session, what do we do now? Well, what do you want to do? Well, we want to keep meeting together. We want to know more about the gods. We want to know more about... Also true. We want to know more about the way things our ancestors lived and how we can put that in our lives today. And I said, okay, well, then we're going to meet and we're going to have a bloat. And it became, in a very short period of time, Harz Hall Kindred in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And it became something that to this day is a growing and powerful force for Ossetru in Edmonton and in Alberta. And we've seen such growth and strength come from that, and such sincerity and desire that to this day I'm floored. And a couple of us got together, and this is about 3.5 years ago, and we decided we'd start a broadcast and see, well, why don't we try to help other people and not be entertainment based, but be more based on teaching and not teaching in a, you know, hardcore academic format, because, you know, the person that's working out in the factory isn't going to connect with that at all. We want to talk in the way that people talk and, you know, enjoy ourselves while we're doing it, but, you know, do this in such a way that, you know, people that are interested in Ossetru can learn something about it. Well, we started out, and the first time that we did our show, it was so bad for the sound quality because, I don't know, we started out in internet streaming radio. And I don't know if you've done that very much or not, but there's a delay.
Bit, yeah.
You know, sometimes it's 5 seconds, sometimes it's 7 seconds where you say something and then you hear it in your headphones. This had a 13-second delay.
Great.
And so it threw us for such a loop that we all sounded like we were a bunch of gibbering orcs. Okay. we'd complete a thought and then we'd hear it go into the headphones. And while we were trying to complete a second thought, it would just throw us completely off and we'd be repeating ourselves. And it was just terrible. And we didn't know what we were doing with our equipment. There's a reason why the first 9 episodes of the NRR are never available. And that's because they were burned. the sound quality was so bad.
Yeah.
And we had all of 6 listeners, and we knew who they were because they were all on the show. Then we decided, you know, we're going to go to a podcast format. And so we did that, and things started to take off from there. And it didn't take much more than about a year and a half, and we were around the 3,000 mark for listenership, which was good. But I began to feel that what we were doing with the NRR was not really touching the hearts and souls of our people, because yes, we were yet another resource for existing Ozitrar, but there are so many people of Northern European descent that are in this world that have never heard the name of Ozitru. They don't know what it is. They don't even know that it existed. You know, we want to appeal to them as well, so that people can have an idea of what it is that actually is missing in their heart. So they can have an idea of what it is that is that piece of the puzzle that they've been looking for, and maybe even that they've been living without knowing the name of it. And so we tried the internet streaming radio again, and we put mainstream content into it as well, not into our shows, but you know, when we weren't on the air, we put mainstream music on. And we thought, well, maybe that'll be something that'll attract the interest of some. And I didn't get the streaming hours that I wanted to get. And so we ended up going back to the podcast format. But I had no idea what the impact of this had been, because I did not have access to my statistics. Mm. And so I thought this was a dismal failure. Back to the podcasting we go. And we went to Podbean. So our current website, we bought our own domain, and the whole 9 yards is northernrunesradio.com. And of course, our podcast server is nrr.podbean.com. And, you know, we looked and we still weren't all that impressed, because we looked at the statistics they show on the podcast server are just the plays. Not the downloads, but the streaming plays from the site. Not anybody that's embedded a player on their site or downloaded an episode or gone on the RSS feed or anything like that. Just the plays on that particular website. And they recently changed their policy so that we had access to our stats, with the exception of iTunes, for the first time. iTunes doesn't share their stats with people, so you're kind of left guessing on that. But on the RSS feeds, I was checking them today, that for RSS subscribers, we were at 51,000.
Great.
I sat there with my jaw hanging open, and my jaw was hanging open when I saw it at 40. And I thought to myself, what in the world? Apparently we succeeded in breaking out of the neo-pagan bubble. And
right.
And mainstream people started listening, bands started listening, people that are from you know, some of the, you know, bigger name acting movies like Hollywood and so on and so forth have started following it and bringing people along with them. My brother just recently got back into mainstream radio. He's been a broadcaster for 40 some odd years. And, you know, he's also supported us. And I was looking at these things, and I'm looking and saying, people are starting to hear about what the name of Ossetru is and what Ossetru really means, because we want to be a resource for Ossetrar, but we also want to introduce people to what Ossetru is, and you know, really get into the meat of what that means today, because I really think people don't know what that means.
Right. Yeah.
In the modern world. And
yep.
I remember when I went to get my marriage license, and if I'm talking too much, by the way, you can just tell me to shut up.
No, no, go, go ahead.
I went and they ask you what religion you are when you're filling out the marriage license. And I said, Ossetru. And I'm looking at this woman, and actually she was born in Iceland. I had a blank stare, and I thought that was really kind of odd. I guess she'd spent most of her life in Canada, but
right, yeah.
She said, "What's that? Is that like the Moonies? Is that like, you know, what is that?" And so I had an opportunity at least to explain what Ossetru was to somebody. But the thing is that there was a blank stare, ignorance as to what it even was.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You ask a modern 21st century individual from Northern European descent, I don't care if it's from the United States, from Canada, from England, from Germany, from wherever, and they'll say, oh, Christian.
Yep.
You know, well, what ancestors have you, found in your family tree? I know you've probably seen these family tree programs that they have out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They say, oh, I trace my ancestry all the way back to 1871. Well, that's good. But our ancestry goes back more than 40,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, even there are records even as far back as the 10th century and the 9th century that people can actually, if they're going to put up with the hassle of going through all of the names and lists, because it's like, if you've ever seen a family tree, it's like looking at an upside down tree.
Yep, exactly.
Where it's small where you are, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger with more roots and branches as you go further back. And my uncle is our family historian, and he actually has traced us back to about the 9th century, and you know, has found, you know, we're from the House of Tremaine, and that is a British Anglo-Saxon house, and it also has part of a root in Holland. And part of a root from the Normans. So it's kind of, you know, all of Northern European descent. And all very, very ancient. And some were, you know, peasants, and some were jarls, and some were horse thieves, and some were this or that. You know, you find all kinds when you go through your family tree. But you know, if you look in your family tree and you stop in 1752, what have you found out? You found out some good things, but you haven't gone back far enough.
No,
to really understand what the history of our people is. I read an article where some archaeologists are saying that the history of our Northern European peoples is 44,000 years, not 40,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that it's even older than what they thought. And, you know, we've been, you know, under the yoke of Christianity for anywhere from 1800 to 1300 years, depending on the region. Because, again, it took 1,000 years for Europe to get fully converted.
Yep.
And even after that, some of the conversion was not really of the heart for quite some time. And, you know, we look at our history, and What's that compared to 40,000 years or 44,000
tiny
years?
fractions. It's nothing at all, you know.
Not at all. And the code of ethics and the code of honor that our ancestors lived by, a lot of people think that was just the Vikings.
Right, yeah.
Viking was a profession. Okay? If somebody was out on a raid, they had gone a Viking.
Yep, it's a verb, actually, yeah.
Yes, it wasn't a tribal name. You know, the Danes were a tribe. All right? The Saxons were a tribe. The Angles were a tribe. The Cherusci were a tribe. And our ancestors did wander in tribes at one time. And they weren't, you know, just a bunch of mindless barbarians. Tacitus, in his work, I believe, called the Germania, made mention of something, just as a side note, but I was struck by the importance of it. And that was that he was marveling at how the Germanic tribal men honored their marriage vows and refused the Roman harlots.
Yep.
And you know, I've heard many people say before, oh no, they were a bunch of promiscuous people. That was a sacred oath. And there was nothing in our ancestors' code for tens of thousands of years, I believe, that was lower than an oathbreaker.
Yep, yep.
And that was, I think, even worse than being a kinslayer. And that was a close second. But, you know, if you broke your oath, then your word was nothing. And if your word was nothing, then you could never be trusted. And, you know, the reputation that the person had, well, that was destroyed. And how we were remembered by our descendants was just as important as the quest for immortality. It was just as important as the destination of your soul. Because if you were not remembered by your children and your children's children, you were nothing. It didn't matter even if you were a great Jarl. If nobody remembered you, who were you?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and so, you know, the keeping of oaths, the respect for the kin. And I liked what I was reading in one of the books of lore. I believe it was book 6 or 7 in the Saxo Grammaticus, where these two individuals were about to fight in a battle, and one found out a rumor. It wasn't even confirmed as fact, but it was a rumor that he was the half-brother of the one he was going to fight. They both put down their weapons and walked away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You would not slay a kinsman.
Yeah.
The other that was considered to be one of the big three was, of course, murder. And a lot of people would think, well, what, you know, they killed lots of people in battle. That wasn't murder. Murder was something that was done in secret, done without a person having the opportunity to defend themselves, something that was dishonorable in the biggest sense of the word. And you know, it's interesting when you read and see the snapshots of the lore of our ancestors and how they dealt with one another. They would not sit there and plot. I can't say none of them. Some of them did, because some of them were dishonorable. But, you know, those that were honorable would challenge their opponents. And sometimes, rather than have a big conflict between two armies, they would challenge the opposing army to a battle of champions. And that way, you know, the battle's victory was decided by the outcome of the duel. And they did that in order to spare the lives of those that would needlessly die otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen every time, but there, you know, there was a respect for life there. And I like, you know, one of the things that Stephen McNallan talks about is how Ossetru stands for life. And I agree with him on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're not out to harm people. We're not out to, you know, be, filled with some superiority complex or other. We are a group of people, just like there are many groups of people in the world that have a right to exist and a right to live. And we, as long as we are also treated with honor, treat others with honor.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let me ask you a couple of things here pertaining to this. I mean, we've certainly lost this type of, approach to life today, this level of consciousness, even in terms of a veneration for our ancestors, for our kin, for our folk. The association to a large extent has been lost, and this has been very successful through the severing of the roots and basically that these religions and also through in particular have been very much just a no-go area. I mean, me personally being raised in Sweden and the Scandinavian, you know, system of schooling and whatnot and what we learn historically and everything else, there's been a topic which is largely just avoided overall. And I feel that that's done for very specific reasons to kind of keep people on this level. And one of the things we want to try to get to here as well today, Daniel, is to try to get to this idea of how do we bring something that is so ancient and pre-Christian into our modern world today and kind of reawaken some of these issues. And of course, getting closer to the question of why is this even important? Because I think everything, you know, that we see wrong with the world today is associated with the fact that we are rootless. We don't have this honorable approach anymore. We don't have the connectivity with our past, and hence we don't have a veneration for what our ancestors did and achieved. You know what I mean? This could even entail our grandparents and their parents, etc. That there's everything that they've worked for to enable us to live in the capacity that we can today is something which is discarded, and it's almost like the role of all of this has been supplanted by state, by government, by system of taxes and everything else. So there's so many problems we face, but I feel that if we could bring this level of awareness and this ancient religion, if we want to call it that, into our times, it's something that could greatly benefit us. But there's so many misconceptions, not only of what they who they were and what they did, as you talked about, but also that people have a conception that, oh, it's to go backwards in time. But my point has always been to argue that no, we need to. It's something that we need to take the positive, the good things about this, and bring it into our times as a way to kind of stabilize things a bit, but continue into the future, continue in progression. I mean, even our ancestors had this very idea themselves. They were not, holding back in that regard. It was something that always was kind of moving forward, and they moved with the times. It was not something that were, kind of static and just stuck in the past all the time, I believe anyway. But what would you say to some of these points and a way to kind of awaken this type of awareness in people? Because as you mentioned, a lot more people are coming to this. So I think that a lot of people are feeling the void that has been left, both when Christianity has been coming in, but now also when Christianity is going out in a lot of Western worlds, it's losing its grounding to a certain degree, and a lot of people are struggling to find something else, right?
Those are very good points to bring up, and I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding out there as to what Ossetru is, first of all. Our ancestors actually didn't have a name for their belief systems. Ossetru is a modern name in order to differentiate it in our modern times from other belief systems that are out there. Our ancestors just called it our way. And it was not like what modern religion in the Western world is shown as. And I I'm really distraught with the view in our modern Western world of what religion is. When you say the word religion, you think of somebody bowing down on their knees before some supreme deity and giving away all of their life and all of their energy and all of who they are to this supreme deity who, through grace, which is a merited, unmerited favor that they don't deserve, allows them, if he or she obeys their commands, to dwell with them in heaven, where they can spend eternity praising his name. That does not appeal to the Northern European soul. I mean, we did not get down on our knees before our gods.
No.
Our gods and goddesses would have been insulted at such an act. They were considered our elder family. We were considered to have been descended from them. They had given gifts to us. If you take a look at the lore, one of the most important pieces of literature that you can find in the lore is called the Voluspa. In it, you find, you know, the story of the end of the world. And you find the story of what the Allfather, Odin, or Wodan, or Wotan, depending on what tribal region you lived in, there were different ways the name was pronounced. But it was the Allfather, the Lord of the Gods, tried to do to stave that date off and give his people, of which we were a part as human beings, a chance to evolve and become something more than what we were, because they wanted to become something more than what they were, too. And we were on a path together. And it was a gift for a gift principle, which is part of what was called Freth, that bound the tribes together. And we don't have that today, because we're taught in the Western world that we are individual people, and that, you know, we're, it's me, myself, and I. We're the only ones that matter. And if we do have other people that we care about, you know, they're individual people too. And, you know, they're separate and the connection's not really there. We need to understand something. And it's so simple. You know, we take a look at our family, for instance. We have a connection to our ancestors. If any one of them had decided not to marry a certain person or had died prematurely, you would not be here.
Yep, that's right.
Okay? You have a connection to them. They are in you. And your children and the children that they have and the children that they have, you will be in them. That's a connection. And our ancestors did not see this as a connection that was dead and gone and not really important. They saw it as something that was alive. An ancestor or a person in the family that passed away was not considered to no longer be a part of the family. They were considered to be a part of the family, and we were just as connected to them as we were to our living kin, as we were to our descendants as well, that were coming after us. Because we did not have a belief system that was based on a predestination. There was no past, present, and future. That's a Greco-Roman model upon which many of the Christian belief systems are based. All right, we had the Norns, the three main Norns, Urdr, Verdandi, and Skuld. What they represented was this. Okay, if you can follow me here. What is? Okay, that's the first thing. What is? Everything that has happened up to and including this present moment. Okay? Secondly, we had what is becoming. Okay, so what is becoming as a result of everything that has happened up to and including this present moment. And then lastly, we have the prognostication of what should become based on everything that has happened before, if nothing changes. We're born on a certain day. We didn't really have much choice on that. We're going to die on a certain day. We don't have much choice on that. All we can do is choose how. And what happens in between those two dates is based upon our action. Our action determines our destiny. Our action determines our fate. And if we don't want to walk in a certain way, we can change our mind and walk in another way. Are you following me here?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And it definitely speaks something different than our times of no responsibility, and that we, whatever we do, we can always, you know, blame someone else, etc., right? So, very different viewpoint here, you know?
The stars weren't right. Or
right, yeah, exactly.
Whatever else.
Yeah.
But you see, to give some terms here, our actions, our past actions and our present actions are considered what was called in the Norse Orlog. Okay? Everything that we do, everything that we say, everything that we decide falls into this well of weird, W-Y-R-D. Okay? Our Orlog determines our weird. Our weird is what the Norns, which I was just talking about, what is, what is becoming, what should become, are weaving like a web on the world tree, which is the universe or the multiverse of our experience. And if you don't like your fate, if you don't like your weird, do something different. You have the power to do something about it.
Yep.
And that was something that our ancestors really did believe. And, you know, this predestination idea was a foreign concept. And this isolationism was a foreign concept. When we're so isolated in individuals, and yes, we are individuals. I'm not downplaying the fact that we are individuals. But we have a context. And that context is multi-layered. It is our family. It is our greater family, which is those that, you know, would be extended. Aunts, uncles, cousins, our tribal family, which would be basically, you know, if you were Anglo-Saxon, or if you were Swedish, or if you were from Denmark, and that was where your lineage is from. And then there's the greatest family, which is the folk soul, which is the entire Northern European peoples.
Yep.
And we have that context. Without that context, our individuality doesn't exist. You know, if you show black on black, what do you see?
Not much.
Not much. But if you show red on black, what do you see?
A whole lot more. Actually, can determine the shape of things, right? So,
exactly. You end up having that context and the contrast that comes with it. Because that folk soul is made up of individuals. And so it goes both ways. But we have to understand that without this connection, we are lost. Without this connection, you know, we're sitting as a people, and we are a people. And this is not a statement saying that we're better than anybody else. But we're not worse than anybody else either. We are equal partakers of the life of the earth, because we have been given existence, and our folk soul has been given existence, and those that come from other ethnicities, their folk soul has been given existence by the, you know, the powers that be. And we need to seek out where we fit in. Not seek out, I mentioned this on a couple of broadcasts. I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit passionate here, because
it's good.
So important to me.
Yeah.
You know, We're the only people on the earth, Henry, that have sought out every possible religious and spiritual endeavor except our own.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, why is that?
It's very interesting, because, isn't it? It's very, I mean, I myself is a living example of this. I've been doing this radio show for many, many years, and although I've been knowing about my own heritage and also through now, of course, for many, many years, it was every conceivable other aspect is something that I explored and looked into and everything, and it took me 5 years, basically, to return back to my own backyard and actually start looking at what was that all about, you know? And I think that speaks something as well of our openness, but also of our curiosity, and also about an aspect which actually, you know, few other have in that capacity, which is, of course, something that's to our detriment, because a lot of people are giving that up. They go to Buddhism, they go to some New Age religion, they go to Native American, you know, tribalism or something like that, despite that they have a Northern European, you know, connection, and they have a whole set of, everything is right there. They're not looking at it for some reason, you know?
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with learning about something. You know, you can learn about anything you want. You can learn about how to build airplanes. You can learn about all the religions that exist in the world if you possibly can find them all. But that doesn't make you a part of their folk soul.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make you a part of their way. There's nothing wrong with knowing about their way.
It might
help you understand what they're talking about when
yep.
you're trying to communicate and, you know, build relationships with people. But you need to understand, folks, that we have our own way. And we were born into it. It's in our blood. It's in our heritage. It's in our ancestry. And a question that I ask people, because as a folkish as it were, I look and I see, you know, these different organizations that are universal, and I say to them, you know, if somebody is from another ethnicity, you know, and some of my best friends are from other ethnicities. Don't get me wrong. You know, one of my best friends is a fellow that is Métis, which is in Canadian, half Germanic and half Native, and he is a shaman on the Native side, or at least has leanings towards that in a very powerful way. And his mother was involved with that in a very powerful way. We've had some great conversations. We've had some great discussions. We've gained great wisdom. He is one of my best friends. But I would never call myself a Native person, like from North America.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
You know, and he would never call himself what I am.
Which is strange, because he's half Germanic.
Yes, but that's the leaning that he chose.
Right, right.
And there is a big story behind that. But the thing is, we have a context that is uniquely our own, and that it's not an evil thing. But the moment you start mentioning that, people start thinking that you're some sort of supremacist or something, and nothing could be further from the truth. All we want is to be respected in the same way that every other group is respected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. You know, we're not out to harm anybody, or to, you know, be ignorant to people, or, you know, we're out there to be recognized as just as distinctive and just the same as everybody else in their distinctiveness. And I really stand for that. And I hope that people that are listening understand what I'm talking about when I'm talking about this too.
Let me just quickly mention that, pick up on that. I don't want to break you off, Daniel. Keep that thought, but I just want to mention as well, I've noticed this too. There's a tendency that, and I want to try to break away from that as well. that, I mean, of course, it's good to explain to people and talk and discuss. I'm not saying that, but I feel a lot of time and effort and energy is caught up kind of standing in a defensive position. And I think that that's something that's ultimately counterintuitive. People spend too much time to kind of tackle the ignorance of the majority of what they feel that it is or whatever, as opposed to living and leading by example and showing what it actually means. Or just as you say, people go into some kind of knee-jerk programmed response where they believe it has something to do with white supremacy or something like that, or even that you have an association with your folk if you are European, or even maybe worse, so, oh my God, if you're Northern European, you know, there's an instinctive kind of response there. And I think that a lot of that is something that just needs to go to the sidelines. So that's just it. I mean, it's like, we have to focus on the good and positive aspects of it, as opposed to being in a defensive position. But I hear you. I definitely understand what you're saying, and it's really unfortunate that it's ended up in that. And I think that that's part of why things are the way they are. It's almost like it's been a tactic to keep us away from it, and by associating it with these kind of straw man arguments and facsimiles of what people believe that it is, as opposed to what it actually is.
Yes. And, you know, I like the point that you made there about, you know, leading by example. And, you know, that's what we try to do with the NRR. And that's what we try to do with our kindred. The NRR is a little bit more nonpartisan than the kindred, because we're one of the things that we need to remember is that the internet seems to show all kinds of different pages and message boards and websites and Facebook sites, but our numbers are not as much as what you would think they would be with all of those sites and pages. And we need to lead by example by going out and just being who we are. And you know, I have found people come around from various viewpoints, just from seeing and experiencing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing, because we can sit and talk to people that don't agree until you're blue in the face, that it doesn't make any difference. It's like the old statement that my father used to say, that he who is persuaded against his will is of the same persuasion still.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just something that you're not gonna win at.
No.
But the thing is, though, is that, you know, it is for the 21st century, because we need this connection, not only with the ancestors, but with our living kin and with our descendants now more than ever. We need it now more than at any other time in the history of our people.
Yes.
Because there's so much going on in the world. You can't hardly turn on the television set without seeing something going on. And, you know, we're looking and the world is looking for somebody to stand up and, you know, some group to stand up, some nation to stand up and provide some actual real leadership. And not by some military action or anything like that. I'm talking about, you know, the voice of reason.
Yeah.
You know, the real voice of reason. There hasn't been anything really coming out. There's just been rhetoric. There's just been party lines. There's just been ridiculousness. And, you know, it's also true, we don't have that. When you take a look at the nine noble virtues, which of course are vitally important for us to understand, we're talking about honor and truth, and independence is one of them too, which of course can also be called industriousness, self-reliance, hospitality, you know, all of the things that are of value to anybody in any society. You know, what kind of example you want to set for your children? Well, look at those virtues. Some of them call them the 12 noble traits. I'm not going to get into all of this here in this interview, but yeah, you know, saying the same thing in different words. Honor is better than dishonor. You know, courage is better than cowardice. You know, we look at these virtues and these traits, and we see the missing piece of the puzzle of our hearts, something that really wasn't missing at all, but we have been made unaware of.
Yeah.
And once a person opens their eyes to become aware, they begin to experience it in their life because it was never really gone. But if you're not aware of it, it doesn't do you any good. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we've been doing. And in the radio station series that we've been doing right now called the Runic Series, we've been delving into the more detailed aspects of the runes, and doing so in the purpose of awakening some of the deeper aspects of the soul complex. And, you know, I mentioned on several broadcasts, you could have a million or $100 million in your bank account, but if you never knew it was there, you could be living under a bridge somewhere thinking you were broke. It doesn't do you any good unless you're aware of it. And yeah, that increasing of awareness is what we're really all about. And I'm not talking about political activism. I'm talking about awareness on a deep soul level, because we need to understand the connection. Because if you understand and experience the connection with the ancestors, you're also experiencing the connection with the gods.
Yeah.
And the goddesses. Yeah. We're not leaving that either. You know, if you experience the connection with your people, you're experiencing the connection to the spirits of the land. You're experiencing the connection with the Alfar. You know, you're experiencing the connection to the different parts of yourself. And when you do that, you know, there's a power and a presence that comes to you, a confidence that is restored, and you are able to stand with your head held high and move forward and make a difference. Because you know what? Nobody wants to listen to somebody who's sitting there apologizing for themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and it's, and that's why it's so important there as well. You know, living as someone to be admired in a, you know, someone who's strong and honorable, I think with strength and determination and will, something that is tied to a strong foundation, that's something that will be attractive to people, especially in a time now when there's so much, well, there's so much moral relativism and confusion overall. We need someone who has that, you know, capacity and leadership. And you know, you can sit around and talk all you want in that regard. It's really, I think people respond to that ultimately, of people who live in a healthy way that is to be admired. And I think everybody knows what that is. It's just that this has been so confused in our times, and there is a, you know, with all the youth, different kind of fashions and movements that are going on in terms of, you know, kind of a very pessimistic attitudes towards the world, very, you know, negativity, very kind of just upset and angry about everything that's going on. And all that is understandable due to the fact that our roots have been ripped up. And this is a capacity that those who have power today and those who seek power to keep us in that position for very clear, you know, distinct purposes when we begin to analyze why it's important for them to keep people very disconnected and people become more easily controllable in that regard, and they can keep us in this current kind of very materialistic corporate kind of structure where people are very dependent on all these other systems as opposed to themselves and their own people, you know. So when people realize what actually is going on there, it does make sense of why this has been kept from us. But with all that being said, all you need in that equation is someone who can fulfill that role of being someone who is to be admired. And I think all people, despite what they say, do respond to that. They do realize what that is. And that's why it's so important in our times and for our folk as well, Daniel, to make these people realize that it's there. It's something that works. It's something that, you know, if you realize these elements that we've been talking about, it's something that you can apply in your own life and drag yourself up from that very, very kind of low position of how we're educated and taught in school and generalities of the society that we're brought up in, you know?
Absolutely. And also, it does not mean when we're talking about Oz the True that all of a sudden you go buy yourself a bunch of leather robes and go stand on the top of a mountain somewhere and act like they did 1,000 years ago.
Right, yeah.
We're talking about something that's applied to our lives today because, you know what? Our people have a history of over 40,000 years. Some are saying over 44,000 years. Okay? And, you know, we have that history. And do you think that they stayed the same all the way through that 40,000 years?
Of course not.
They changed with the times and different things happened. And we in the 21st century are no different. You know, I certainly don't go wielding a sword to burn down the town of Red Deer. I'm sorry. I'm not out to do that. You know, I would be out to spend the rest of my life in prison if I went and did that. And it would be dishonorable because that's not the way we live our lives today. Nowadays, the battlefield, and a lot of people have said, oh, yes, you know, Oz the True is always talking about the gods of war and so forth. It's embracing the struggle for survival and the struggle that life is. Mm, and if you look at nature around you, from the biggest star to the smallest atom, you'll find the same thing. There is a struggle to expand, a struggle to survive, a struggle to become. And the moment that struggle stops, it's dead.
Yep.
And we're no different. All of this talk about peace and love and balance and all that, that's all fine and good for a romance novel. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm sorry if I offended you or anybody else by saying that.
It's reality. It's reality,
it's
though.
But that doesn't mean that you're being ignorant or you're doing something that's not right. You're moving to expand the name of your family and of your own deeds so that you become something more than what you were. And that your children have something more than what you were. What father or mother has not desired at some point in time or other that their child would have a better life than they did?
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know, and I've had 4 kids, so I know what I'm talking about here. If you're young and listening to this and you haven't had any, you know, I'm not going and telling you to go out and have a whole bunch. But
no, they should, though. They should.
Well, within the right context. I'm sure their parents wouldn't be too pleased if it was in the wrong context.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, when we're talking about, you know, having children and you have some of your own, you'll know what I'm talking about. You'll want them to have a better life than you did.
Yeah.
And that's part of what becoming something more than what you were is all about, because it's not all about you. It's about your family. It's about that connection. You were given your name by your ancestors, and now you're going to pass that name on, and you want to add your piece to it. And, you know, we take a look at the energies that surround this concept and realize that this eternal struggle to survive is not all about a bunch of people waving spears and swords around and having conflicts. For one thing, in the modern world, the armies of the world would be killing themselves with laughter if they saw you marching down the field with your shields and your spears. Okay? While they're sitting there with their thermonuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Okay? They would be looking at you and thinking you were insane more than anything else. And our ancestors did not have the ability technologically to destroy the planet, whereas we do.
Yeah.
So the conflicts that we deal with now are actually the conflicts of the mind more than anything else.
That's right. Yeah. Ideologies is a warfare of, you know, well, I don't want to say politics, but really to a certain extent, the belief system and even cultural values of how, you know, how morality is passed down to people. I mean, look at what people are being taught today and everything else. It's a very decadent, kind of narcissistic and very destructive type of environment that our children is growing up in. And it's something that plagues me every single day. And I think about it, and I think about is to how to turn this around and how to win this war, how to win this battle as it is, you know, because it's something that is unhealthy to our people, you know?
Absolutely. And it's a battle of the mind that is really more serious than any battle our ancestors ever fought.
That's right. Exactly.
Because, you know, the battles our ancestors fought that you see written about in the sagas and the stories were about either greed for land, or it was over defending the winter food stores from an enemy tribe. Today, we don't live in tribes anymore, and we have a whole different set of rules that we live by as civilized people. But the battle that we fight in the mind is not about how much grain we're going to have over the winter. It's about whether the soul of our people lives or dies.
Yeah.
Okay. We are at the crossroads, and we have been for a while now, but there's still time, I believe. We are at the crossroads of decision as to whether or not we are going to press forward to become, or whether we're going to just lie down.
Yeah. And disappear and vanish into the times of and the history books. You know, Daniel, this is a very important point, and I'm glad you brought this up. I'm glad we got to this, point right here. I do want to take a short little break here, just between the segments, and then pick right up here and continue our very interesting and very rich conversation in terms of Asatru through and everything that we've been seeing happening in the world, and how to apply, of course, some of these honorable virtues and everything else to how to live our lives. There's just so much more to talk about here. But before we do that, though, please give us all the details. I want our listeners to know where they can go to follow you on a regular basis, the different, I guess, if there's a way to contact your different, you know, organizations that you're connected with, if that's websites or whatnot. Please, give us all the details so our listeners know where to go.
Okay. Well, there's three places that are the best places to get a hold of us. First of all is our main website, which is just northernrunesradio.com. You can contact us through that. You can also listen to our broadcast there if you want, and there's all kinds of information. There's our podcast server, and that is just simply nrr.podbean.com. And there you can go and you can see write-ups. It's kind of like a blog. And there's players there that you can listen to the episodes on and also subscribe to the RSS feeds. And also on Facebook. All you got to do is type in Northern Runes Radio into the search feature of Facebook, and you probably won't even get finished typing it before our page comes up. Like the page. And you can communicate with us either through the posts on the page, or you can do private messaging. I'll give you the simplest email address that we have, and that's runesradio@gmail.com. And that's all one word, runesradio@gmail.com, all small letters. And you can get in touch with us. And I realize I do go through a lot of messages, but I will get back to you. And everybody that has messaged us, they can testify to the truth of that. It may take me a few days because I go through sometimes upwards of 200 messages in a day. But I will get back to you. So those are the best ways to get in touch with the NRR Northern Runes Radio, and also hopefully take part in the shows, listening to them and spreading them around to those that you know and love, because we're in a battle for the mind.
Absolutely. NorthernRunesRadio.com. We'll have the other links up, as Daniel mentioned as well. There's a lot to learn, a lot to dive into. So do check it out, folks, and dive into that. But we'll continue here in a little bit in the next segment. So stay with us, everybody. Stay with us, Daniel. We'll be right back.
mörkre skall spira dig. Mörkret skall spira dig.